You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 10th of May 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com, because we have with us tonight the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story ever told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing?
Yes.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. I'm having a battle with the last part, really, which I've got too much information, so I'm going to have to work out a bit of a jigsaw puzzle.
We got the preview version, haven't we? We've got the preview version, the second half of that we're going to be discussing tonight. So are you mm-hmm. thinking you're going to be adding a few more bits to it yet before it finally gets a public viewing?
Well, it's possible, yeah, but you know, it's also possible to eliminate some as well. It just depends how it all falls.
Well, it's all interesting stuff that we can get into tonight. A bit about the Jewish banking cabal and masonry in France, the movies, Magda Goebbels' last letter. If we've got time, we've got some comments that we'll get into. But we've got a comment that came in this evening that we will start off with. And that was left in the chat room for us by Anglo Falcon. He's a long-time listener. I think he's been listening since way back when we first started the series, I think, 3 or 4 years back. But he's got a question for you, Dennis. He says, what is the possibility of international Jewry faking an alien invasion or the second coming of Christ? What's the possibility of that?
Well, I think it's been well known in some circles for a while that they're going to use the alien thing to bring the world together. I know Reagan actually covered this in Communism by the Back Door. Reagan gave some speeches in the UN on one particular time. He even suggested they were already here. So, yeah, it's quite possible. They've probably got the technology to do it as well by now. So people better watch out for that, because if they do actually do it, I would imagine it would be quite convincing.
You know, I think they might have moved on with the times a bit now. They might be more interested in promoting the idea of climate change, faking climate change, and saying, well, we all need to get together and form a world government with a that's telling everybody else what to do and hand all our sovereignty over to them, because the world's going to heat up and we're all going to die otherwise. I think they might have modified their plans a bit since then.
Well, it's possible. Like I said, they'll probably move with the times. And global warming, I've made an argument over that with a lot of people who insist that it's real, but I refuse to, again, I covered that again. Because when one world government comes together, there's going to be no more wars. And if there's going to be no more wars, then there's going to be no more money for certain people. And so certain things have to be taxed to raise the equivalent amount. And that's one of them.
Good point there. And it used to be all about the ozone layer, didn't it? Remember hearing about the ozone layer? It was a big hole above us.
Yeah.
They seem to have forgotten about that one. And now they've got this Greta Thunberg pushing the idea. I mean, it does seem to be a major scam that they're pulling, to be honest, because the whole solar system is heating up and it's certainly been a lot warmer in Europe than it is now. We used to have, we used to grow grapes and make our own wine and all sorts of things in the Middle Ages. And if you have more carbon dioxide, plants just grow bigger. You get bigger plants. And they've been saying, well, we're not going to have enough food to feed everyone. Well, if you've got more carbon dioxide, the plants will be twice as large. The fruit will be twice as large. In fact, you'll just grow a lot more. So there's quite a few holes in their theory, I think. And the last bit, faking, the second coming of Christ, I think what we see them do is they promote people, or they promote antichrists as if they are Christs. Look at the way they promoted Barack Obama. Yeah, the way they got Barack Obama into power and they made him out to be this great hero, and we'll give him a Nobel Peace Prize. Well, he was an antichrist, but the Jews made him out to be a Christ-like figure. And, you know, they may do that with Pete Buttigieg, Pete Buttcheese, or whatever his name is, this homosexual mayor he's the mayor of E. Michael Jones's town, and he's put himself in for president and in the next presidential race. Yeah, and they're really pushing him. They're pushing him like he's going to be some kind of savior figure. But they regularly do that. So, Yeah, well, you see, I'm not so sure that...
Shabazz or somebody. He had a huge following. And he ended up in a Muslim country being asked to either convert or die. And if you're the Antichrist, it won't really bother you. And he converted to Muslim. Can't remember his proper name, but...
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, with this idea of... alien invasions or Christ, you know, that's thinking how things were a few years back, but things change all the time, and they move with the times, and it becomes other deceptions that they're trying to pull on us, basically. So yeah,
well, but who knows what a warped individual thinks at the best of times, because I'm sure they've all got something missing.
Yeah, well, they laid the ground that they could fake an alien invasion with all the X-Files and all the sci-fi stuff that they had, but that was a decade or so back, wasn't it? So, and now it's pushing climate change.
It's working out, you know, a mind as such. It's not easy, if you're not on the same level of insanity.
Yeah, it's a different horror that they sort of come out with every so often, don't they, that we're all supposed to be frightened of happening, basically.
What worries me, is the cloning. Because when they cloned that sheep, Dolly, in 1988, and they've said ever since that scientists have been told not to clone, which means they will be cloning, that's what's a worry to me, because, once they've done it, they'll keep doing it. And it's been obviously been done.
You've got places that don't have such strict laws as us. I mean, China is moving forwards with that pretty quickly, with the genetic modification and modifying humans and gene splicing techniques and various things that they do. There's a lot that we don't know about. But yeah, I mean, just genetic modification of organisms, GMO. I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah.
But... what's even worse than that is
he would buy some.
Yeah, but what's even worse than that is the genetically modified humans that nobody makes a fuss about. I mean, race mixing. That is a genetically modified human. It's the same thing, and yet none of the Greens or the people that supposedly care about the environment, they'll never make a fuss about that. That goes against people's human rights, I guess. They should have a right to. You should have a right to be born as part of a race with a heritage and with ancestors and with parents that look like you. That should be a right.
Does it help though when Prince Harry has one?
Well, yeah, Prince Harry would be breaking that law, wouldn't he? Less said about that, the better, I think. Less said about that, the better. Right, well, let's get into part 20 here. And we did half of it last week, and where we got up to was about the Jewish banking cabal. And what we've got here, we've got your script for it, basically, the text that appears there. And you say the US bankers had been providing loans for the £6,600 million in war reparations that were forced on Germany after World War One. And I'm guessing that is £66 billion there. The bankers were sending millions to Germany in 1933 when Hitler came to power, even though he refused to pay any war reparations. So the bankers were still sending the money. Far from funding both sides of the war in the way that some claim, the bankers actually sent millions during the final 2 years of the Weimar government when Germany was unable to make any payments due to the financial crash. The proof for this can be found in the 1933 declaration of a holy war upon Germany, Sunday, August the 6th, 1933, by Samuel Untermeyer. On his return to the US from the World Jewish Congress in Amsterdam, he publicly chastised the bankers for sending this money to Germany on WABC radio. And so there we have it. The bankers, the Jews, they were sending money still to Germany, and Germany was obviously, well, for the past 2 years, they hadn't been sending any of it back in reparations. They'd been spending it on funding the National Socialists. So do you want to talk a little bit more about that and explain that and where you found it and all the rest of it, Dennis?
Yeah, well, like I said, it is in the 1933 declaration, the Holy Declaration, which people, you know, are unaware of. You know, it's been ignored. The actual meat of the speech has been ignored by historians, and now we find that this actual proof of bankers sending money to Germany has also been ignored by the historians. But Samuel Untermeyer does a great favour in exposing all this. And if you read the text, which is still available on the internet, it really does an half goes to town on Germany and how they treat the Jews, which was all blown apart when the information about the transfer agreement came out. So it was a statement of war, a statement of worldwide boycott, hoping to starve Germany as they did in World War One, at the end of World War One, if you remember. I think nearly 900,000 were starved before they could sign that treaty. And Hitler always said the treaty meant nothing to him because his government wasn't there when the agreement was made. So for some reason, they're sending all this money to Germany, and he asks a couple of, he's wondering what the sack is. Are they afraid? Or a couple of other reasons he gave, but the one reason he didn't give was greed. Because if you send so much money and you're not receiving regular payments, as everybody knows, you get a bank loan and you don't pay it, then the interest mounts. And so, you know, far from being funding both the wars, they were quite happy to keep sending this money. Because in 1933, Hitler hadn't actually been declared an enemy at all. So they just carried on sending the money. And Hitler thought, thank you very much. I'll put this to good use.
So the money wasn't being sent so that Hitler could form the National Socialist and scare all the Jews to run off to Palestine. The money was being sent because they were hoping to rake in millions in interest payments on the fact that he hadn't paid it back, and that Weimar had, because it was supposed to go on the reparations, wasn't it? It was supposed to go on reparations, and they hadn't paid it back.
We're bagging the loan, which must have been another sting, you know, in the tail for the bankers, because I mean, Wall Street's controlled by London, so all in all, you know, it would have an extra bonus of supplying these reparations for the banks.
Well, that's what they wanted, wasn't it? They wanted it to be paid back on reparations, and they wanted them to keep taking out loans in order to do that. The last thing they wanted was for Germany to get itself back on its feet with that and invest in infrastructure and get itself an economy again. And as soon as it did, and as soon as it was producing goods, it was time to put that economic boycott on them and stop buying their goods. And that was the declaration of war, wasn't it? When was that? 1934, wasn't it?
No, 33.
That was 33. It was at this time. Yeah. It was at this time. Right, so right up until that point, this money had still been sent there by these Jewish by these Jewish bankers, hoping to make a fortune out of it.
According to Samuel Untermeyer, who is the leading spokesman for the American Jews at that time, and he should know.
Well, I think he can believe. I mean, he's chastising them, isn't he? He's saying this money's being spent on sending anti-Semitic pamphlets to Britain and America. And propaganda and criticising the Jews, and you lot are all paying for it. that's what he's saying, isn't it? Really?
Exactly what he said. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why haven't the historians dug this one up then? You know, I come on and stumble on it.
Where did you find it?
It was in the speech on archive.org. In fact, it was actually reprinted in the New York Times the day after, and somebody left a message up on archive.org saying that there was no trace of it. So he wasn't saying it was wholly believable, but I know it, there was. It's just that they buried it.
So you dug it out. You dug out the whole speech and discovered that that bit was in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that were a big surprise to me because I had seen it before. I think I did some on the coming by the back door with it. So I knew that the New York Times had printed every word the day after. And so it wasn't a surprise to me neither when they said they couldn't find it.
So it's true but that the Jews were funding it, but yeah. Not in the way that the conspiracy theorists promote the idea, isn't it? Interesting.
Well, they have all these ideas the Bushes and people like that supporting them, and yet this was in plain daylight. This was announced over American radio. You know?
It was sent out to the whole of America, wasn't it? You know, he was hoping to shame these bankers, basically, but it's done us a favour 75 years later, 80 years later, to see what was really going on.
This is what happens with the truth. You can bury it, you can launch it into a sea, but eventually it'll come back up.
The interest charged for loaning £66 billion for war reparations and the usury mounting over the two-year period by the Weimar government that went completely unpaid could easily have been the death of Germany. To then continue sending money to Hitler's government, who had always refused to make any repayments, it is clear that the motivation for the bankers was ultimately greed. And it proves that, doesn't it?
Well, it's certainly not charity, I'm sure of that.
And you're saying, I mean, that could have been the death of Germany, really.
Well, I think the Versailles Treaty was meant to be the death of Germany. But something along the way has gone a bit adrift, called Hitler.
And they wanted to make money out of it. I guess you can't make money out of dead people. I guess they had to keep them alive in the hopes of getting these interest payments back eventually. But they, as you say, they weren't counting on Adolf Hitler. Well, the next bit we come across in the episode is Freemasonry, and you say, so what has Freemasonry got to hide? And then you highlight the film that the National Socialists made in France, in Vichy France, called Occult Forces. Have you seen this film, Dennis? You must have seen the film.
Yeah, I saw it a while back, actually, yeah. And obviously, the title of the documentary is The Secret of Masonic Victory. And so, you know, Freemasonry pops up again. I ask the question, you know, if it's so innocent, well, what's it got to hide? And then we show a clip of the forces of cult and how people want me and produced and acted in it, suffered at the retaking of France.
It's quite interesting digging up the information on it. There's I got some info from Wikipedia. I got some info from some forums. There was also some info on Metapedia, and I think the quote that was taken from Metapedia was from a few years back, because Metapedia has been taken over by Zionists now. They bought the Metapedia out, and now the information on it is the same as it is on Wikipedia. And there's a surprise.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But it's quite interesting just learning about it. For those of you that haven't actually seen the film, Force Occults or Occult Forces is subtitled The Mysteries of Freemasonry Unveiled for the First Time on the Screen. That's the subtitle. It's a French film of 1943, and it's notable as the last film to be directed by Paul Rich. And that's the pseudonym of Jean Mamy, and he was executed for making this film after the war. And the film recounts the life of a young member of Parliament who joins the Freemasons in order to relaunch his career. And he thus learns of how the Freemasons are conspiring with the Jews and the Anglo-American nations to encourage France into a war against Germany. And this guy, Paul Ritchie, he was a part of the Grand Orient of France. He was very high up, actually. He was a very high up Freemason, and he was actually a leftist. And it was once Germany had come into France and they agreed to their armistice that he then joined the National Socialists and made this movie. So it must have been because of what he had seen there in Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. And then when the National Socialists came in, he saw his chance to work with them and give them all the information that he had and make this movie. So of course at the end of the war that they executed him for this, and the others were locked up as well. And I've got some more I've got more information on it from Metapedia. Mm-hmm. It says it's a French dramatized documentary about Freemasonry from 1943, particularly exposing its cronyism, corruption, and duplicity. The film was directed by a former member of the Grand Orient of France for 8 years, Jean Mamy, and thus includes authentic footage of Masonic initiation ceremonies. After the Second World War was over, the people involved in creating the film were persecuted as an act of revenge. The producer, Robert Musard, was sentenced to 3 years. The writer, Jean-Marc Rivière, was condemned to death in his absence, while the producer, Jean Mamy, was executed at the Fortress of Montrouge. Now, just think about that for a minute, just for making a film. That's all they did. They made a film. And this shows us that the subject matter, you know, it must have been very close to the truth. The exactly. Masons must have so much power because of the way these guys were punished just for making a film. Why shouldn't you make a film about Freemasonry? And the authentic footage, it does look like that. Now, somebody pointed out that during the initiation ceremony, some of the Masons, they do the Roman salute. And why would the National Socialists have that if it wasn't authentic? Because it could have made people think, well, there's a link between National Socialism and Masonry because they're all doing this Roman salute. So that shows us that this was an authentic recreation of the initiation ceremony, because otherwise they would have cut that out. So that shows us that this was an honest representation of what was actually going on. And in the film, a young politician, Pierre Avignel, set in the French Third Republic, is sick of the narrow party political game in Parliament, which is degenerating the country. He criticizes the capitalists for their greed and the communists for their manipulation of the masses for their own self-seeking ends. Naive and looking for solutions, he is approached by Freemasons, who tell him that their organization is about progress and upstanding morality, so he joins the lodge. And there he finds a strange world of intimidating oaths and pledges to serve the Brotherhood. And he finds he can't talk to his wife about what he's doing. And this shows you that, you know, these people that join the Freemasons, they're not bad people looking to rule the world. They're good people that, like this guy, was naive and he was looking for solutions. Mm. and he fell for their spiel about upstanding morality and progress. So it's and that's the way that it happens. Because as we've said before, haven't we, Dennis, you know, there's a lot of people that, like Henry Ford, that was a Freemason, that, you know, yeah, he can't have been involved in this dodgy side of it. But it is linked to all the revolutions, communism, you know, French Revolution. I mean, the French Revolution, their motto came from Freemasonry. Liberty, equality, fraternity. The film was commissioned in 1942 by the propaganda Abteilung, a delegation of National Socialist Germany's propaganda ministry within occupied France by the ex-Mason Mamy. And they say it virulently denounces Freemasonry, parliamentarianism and Jews as part of Vichy's drive against them and seeks to prove a Jewish Masonic plot. And that's what they have to say about it. And it's based on a true story, basically. That's what they forget to tell you. I mean, this guy that directed it.
Yeah.
It was about him.
Well, I was going to say, so. Yeah, well, it was also tied into this battle with the Catholic Church. Although they don't actually say this, we know that there's been a battle with the Catholic Church. And every chance that the National Socialists got, they exposed Freemasonry to the public, as you know, taking artifacts from lodges across Europe and even the Channel Islands back to Berlin and Nuremberg and putting them on display to show just what Freemasonry was all about. And obviously when they went into other countries, they did the same.
Is there any mention of the church in the movie, the Catholic Church at all?
Not that I can think of, no. I could be wrong, though. It's a while back. But to me, it's just educating, again, what Hitler used to do. This is why the Germans wouldn't surrender, because they knew what the battle was and they knew exactly what they were fighting for and against. And so that education, what Hitler actually exposed, part was Freemasonry, and of course the other part was the bankers.
Well, it must have been very, very persuasive. Because, I mean, even this guy, he was a leftist originally. And then when the National Socialists came in, he must have seen the truth about Freemasonry himself, and then he must have learnt a bit more from the National Socialists and thought, hang on a minute, these guys are talking the truth. And I should be helping them out.
2 and 2 make 4.
And a lot of people did in Vichy France. There was a lot of support.
A lot of people in France, I think they were gutted when the Americans landed.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a liberation.
You know, the sense of things.
It wasn't a liberation at all, was it? I mean, it was rapes and bombings and shootings and terrible things that went on. And during wartime, as it were, I mean, it was pretty much a peaceful country. The only problems were caused by the French resistance that get made out to be heroes now, but were in actual fact terrorists. There was an armistice. It's the that French resistance were the equivalent of that IRA group that shot that journalist the other day. There's an armistice in Northern Ireland, and it was the same situation in France. There was an armistice, and these French Revolution groups that get made out to be heroes, you know, they were the equivalent of the IRA continuing to fight today in Northern Ireland. Yeah, they can't argue against
the tar and feathering of the women who actually had relationships with the Germans as well. They suffered.
That happened afterwards, did it? Once they were so-called liberated.
Yeah. In fact, the dark-haired girl out of ABBA, her mother was a daughter of an SS. Her mother had to move her to Germany and into Sweden because she was in danger.
I was going to say, she's Swedish. ABBA are Swedish, aren't they? I know there was... I think it was in Denmark. There was some really bad things done to the children of the Danes married the SS or whatever it was with them.
Well, interestingly enough, Leon de Grelle managed to escape capture. He actually landed a plane in Spain, crash landed it, but survived. But apparently they took it out on his family. I think they sent all his children off in different directions to be raised, different people. And his wife and his eldest sons suffered as well, imprisonment. So, you know, they were looking for revenge.
Well, you can see why, you know, the Goebbels thought, well, it's best that our children, you know, leave this life now.
Correct.
Rather than see... the way the world is going to be once we've lost.
Well, that's one of the touching parts of the greatest story ever told, because for many years people just assumed that it was just a callous murder, but it actually showed what the communists were doing at the time, and they weren't that far away, and what they would have done, even to Hitler's dog, to be quite honest. People criticised Hitler, but even Blondie would have been put to, you know, a group of Bolsheviks gets hold of Blondie as a dog, it's a problem. And so to Goebbels' children, if they got hold of them as well, that actual clip was probably one of the most touching in that documentary, where she went around not as an evil, perpetrator of evil, but somebody who not only has to do it once, but 6 times, the worst nightmare for any mother, to actually kill their own child to save them from the horrors.
To prevent them falling into the enemy's hands. And this was always the noble thing to do in battles of the past, because if you're having a war and it's a battle to the death and one side loses, that means you owe your life to the person that's won. You owe your life to them. So you would either have to accept slavery and stay alive, or you would have to fall on your sword and die. And that was the law, basically. So if they'd have lived, I mean, the noble thing to have done would have been that they would have had to have become the enemy, basically. Those kids would have been terribly treated, and then they would have become the enemy themselves. This is just the way that it was done in the ancient world. You either fall on your sword or you become a slave. Who wants to be a slave? The noble thing to do is to fall on your sword, which is what they did. We'll get into that letter a little bit later on, because we'll just continue with the Masonic stuff here, because then you also show a clip on the Masonic Bible, which some of the listeners may have seen before. I mean, that's quite an old clip. Did you have it on you've had it on your channel for quite some time, haven't you? Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, it's been up there for a while. The Masonic thing came into it again because of the title. I've actually got another piece of film of a woman talking about the Bible as well, this Masonic Bible. I just wanted to show the difference, what people found, because this isn't in every Masonic Bible. This is in, somebody left a comment saying you can get a Masonic Bible on the internet. These are authentic ones which people don't normally see, unless you are a Freemason. They've got to be handed in after you die as well, apparently, so. You know, the secret is being kept then. But one or two obviously go by the wayside. And this was an opportunity to show the difference.
Well, there's a couple of bits in it. And the guy that's looking at it, and I think obviously he's just picked it up for the first time, and he's just saying whatever comes to mind. Now he picks out pictures of the Egyptian gods, and he says, well, that's out of place. What's that doing there? Yes, you know, what are you doing with pictures of idols in the Bible? But then he pulls out a couple of other bits, and he says, he picks out the black obelisk, and he says, oh, this is the phallus of Osiris or something like that. And it's not, actually. I mean, that black obelisk, that's a record of the battles with Israel by Shalmaneser III. It's a very important piece of archaeology that proves that what's said in the Bible is correct. It's not a phallic thing. It's just showing you that the Bible's telling the truth. So I'd question that. And then there's another bit, and it shows you Akkadian script. And it's like, oh, look at this. This has got to be demonic or something, just because it's Akkadian script, Babylonian, Babylon. But Akkadian script, that was just the language that was used about 4,000 years back. In actual fact, the tablets that Moses had, that he transcribed onto papyrus, that then became the book of Genesis, they would have been written in Akkadian script. And we can tell that by the way that it's actually written. When it says these are the generations of so and so and so and so, that was a device that was used on these tablets to say this tablet belongs to this person. And then when it will even tell you where it was written and where the tablet was written. And these are all devices that were used when writing these Akkadian tablets. So again, it's proof of the truth of the Bible. That's why those bits were in there. But I don't know why the Egyptian gods were in there, and obviously the Masonic stuff is no, and the Masonic stuff is obviously evil, and then it says about you've got some of the clips from what they're actually asked. These Masons are asked, and they're constantly asked, "What is it you're looking for?" And they say, "Oh, we're looking for the light," and obviously the light bringer is Lucifer. So it's a coded way of showing you that actually it's the worship of Lucifer, the Luciferians. Now, and that's the final degrees when they find that out.
Yeah, I think point out that the Bible actually starts on page 33, which we know is a significant number
on
the Masons as well, you know.
It would do. But when you think of Luciferianism and this worship of Lucifer and the light bringer, and you think the Enlightenment, you know, it's right out there in the open. It's called the Enlightenment, and it's all these Enlightenment principles that lead to the situation that we're in today.
Exactly.
At the time, you had humanists and pagans and Jews that were all supporting the Enlightenment and the Enlightenment values, and then on the other side, you had the Catholic Church that was trying to stand against them.
Battling against it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You had the Masons that were supporting it, humanism, and it all comes under the heading of the Enlightenment, and that's basically something that comes from Lucifer, something that comes from Satan. That doesn't come from God.
I would say so.
God talks about being a light which no man can see, which, you know, the best symbol for that would be the black sun. Those halos that you see around the saints' heads and that you see around Christ's heads, a better representation of that would be the black sun, a light which no man can see. And that's what the black sun is symbolizing. It's symbolizing the light of God. So, the material light, that's the light of illusion. And that's the light of enlightenment and the light of delusion. And you miss out on what the truth is. If you're looking for enlightenment here in this life, when you're a mere mortal, then you're going to be tricked. You're going to be deceived, because we live in a corrupt world. So you can't have that here, because it's corrupted. We have to wait until we end up either with God and at the day of the Lord. That's when you get true enlightenment. But you can't have it here, because
what a way to call that's going to be.
Yeah, well, you can only have that in eternity. So it's got to be a trick. I mean, the devil is the greatest trickster. He's a deceiver. And I always liken it to, if you're going out poaching, say, or you're going out hunting, and you go out in a, you know, you go out in a truck and you have a big light, you go lamping, and any animal that sees that lamp is just transfixed in the glare.
Yeah.
And they just stare at it. And then the poacher's got them. The hunter's got them. You could do the same with fishing. Mm-hmm. And that's what Lucifer is. He's just dangling this light to get people dazed by it. Yeah, attracting people and daze them by it. And once they're transfixed, you know, you can't talk to them. You can't explain facts and reality to them, because it just goes in one ear and out the other. That's it. They're caught. They're hooked. And it happens to people. You know, it seems to happen to these people that dabble in Freemasonry. You know, I would say Miguel Serrano is a really good example. I mean, he dabbled in Freemasonry. He wrote the book Hitler, the Ultimate Avatar. Bits of it are very good. He works out that the non-whites they're not basically fully human like us, and they were created by the fallen angels interbreeding with men, and they created all these non-whites. And then he misses the fact that all of that is in the Bible as well. And I think the reason why he missed that is because he dabbled with his Freemasonry. That had got his hooks into him. And there was a bit of goddess worship in there as well. And it all comes from being subverted by Freemasonry. Gnosticism. Well,
if you take a step back, you know, they're not going to build a load of clubs around the world and stick on the door, this is Lucifer's club. They're not going to blatantly say that. So it's a perfect way of drawing people innocently into this club by means of, well, if you join, you've contacts in business and you're going to bet yourself and what we do for charity and all this kind. So men of, you know, good spirits, should I say, or good hearts, join the Freemasonry, not aware of what its underlying meaning is, and suddenly you're all in this club of Lucifer. And the New World Order is this attempt to join all religions together, kill Christianity off, and join all the other religions together as one religion, which is going to be Luciferian. And it's a perfect way of drawing these people in, as you say, like they do with the light, you know, they do with these lodges or clubs.
Well, even the way they promote their ideas today, it's all couched in terms of, you know, having sympathy and compassion for the refugees and compassion for the homosexuals and the transsexuals, and they're bullied so much, you know, they end up committing suicide and have such terrible lives, and it's so mean and nasty of us not to allow them to say that they're married and give them the same rights as the rest of us. And it's all couched in terms of, you know, this is the right thing to do. We know better now.
Yeah.
We were silly savages back then when homosexuality sexuality was illegal and race mixing was illegal. You know, we were silly back then. We weren't as educated and as clever as we are now. And now we're clever enough to be more clever than God. We can turn our backs on everything that our ancestors taught us that they said came from the divine realms. We know that's all a load of nonsense now. We can make up our own laws. You know, that's the way they push it. It is put in those terms. It's very clever the way that they pull it across on us. You know, if you're to tell the actual truth, it's going to wipe us all out by doing that. It will lead to the race going extinct. Nobody would take it, would they? Nobody would accept it.
Exactly. The thing what gets me about it, although it goes above certain things. Like, for instance, there's a story in the American Civil War when one of the Southern soldiers was injured and he called out to the Union soldiers, is there a high-ranking Mason? And they took him into the camp and found him one, and he was looked after and brought back to health again. Whereas if he'd have been a Christian, he probably just got another bullet. So it even rides over the fact that your companions in war, you know, soldiers on your own side, it rises above that, this club.
So it overrides everything.
It's got to be something extra special.
It overrides everything, doesn't it? And all these oaths that they take that if they divulge any secrets or any of that, then, you know, they've got all these horrific things that's going to happen to them. And they do that. I mean, remember that banker a while back?
Yeah, it's proven, yeah.
So they've got to do that to instill the fear in people, not to tell their secrets.
His cold forces got it, didn't it? He was an ex-Mason.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, what excuse did they use for that? You know, you're executing a guy for making a movie while the country was occupied by the Germans. I mean, that's what he did. He made a movie. He didn't take part in the camps or didn't fight for the Germans against the Allies. Nothing. He just made a movie. So it's got to be the subject matter of the movie, isn't it?
Secrets, and they are warned against that. But even so, it's a big ask, isn't it?
Boy, they used the law to do it, didn't they? I mean, I don't think he was, you know, abducted and then given a Masonic execution. I think he was executed as in, like, you've broken the law. You made a movie with the Germans. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, they could have said, they could have been fraternising with the enemy, so to speak. But
what choice did they have?
It says what it is, doesn't it, really?
Well, they're going to execute all of France for continuing to do their jobs while they were occupied? I think it just really does show, doesn't it?
I'm sure he did suffer for it because the guy in charge of France, he got sentenced to death, but he actually, I think he just served a life sentence and died in prison. But he actually received a death sentence at the court, and that was just for having this armistice with the Germans.
Did anyone else that made movies with them, did they get executed?
This is the first time I've heard of this one, so you can't rule out anymore because the Allies won the war and they're not going to tell you. They're going to ban any books.
Stryker was executed, wasn't he, for producing Der Stürmer? But
yeah, he was. Yeah, he was.
You could say that was specific people. I mean, Freemasons, all it's doing is exposing what this organisation gets up to. It's not...
obviously what they don't like.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it shows it, doesn't it? That's what I mean. It really does show you how important it is to them.
They're highly instrumental, yeah.
Yeah. Well, moving on from that, as I say, you then get to this letter from Magda Goebbels to her son Harold, and you mentioned it in the first movie, what actually happened and how she ended up having to take the lives of her children. But you bring it up here because of a note in the final line of her letter. And she says, "Dear Harold, we are locked down in the Führer bunker at the Reichschancellery and we are fighting for our lives and honour. How will this fight end? God only knows. But I know it will end for us with honour and glory, dead or alive. I do not think we will see each other again because of this. This will be the last words you will receive from me. Don't let the noise that the world is about to start disorientate you. One day the lies will fall under their own weight and truth will triumph over them. The hour will come in which we will be above all clean and without guilt, like our faith and task were. So they're saying their faith and their task were clean and without guilt. Goodbye, dear Harold. If we meet again, it depends on God. If it's not to be, I will always be proud of having belonged to a family that, even in adversity and up to the last moment, has been faithful to the Führer and his pure and holy cause. And it's those last words there that you wanted to concentrate on, pure and holy cause. And as I say, and
why would you say it? Why would you say them words if it weren't a holy war?
Yeah, it's so obvious that they were Christian. I mean, they're not talking about Islam here. They're not talking about Odin. This is Christianity, a pure and holy cause.
Yeah.
And their faith is clean.
They're not looking
and
for
votes,
guilt, as some people say.
Goebbels mentions
the final letter.
I think Goebbels mentions it as well. I mean, and Karen Jaeger, she read out them in full both of these letters the other day, and I can remember thinking it then when hearing it, that this is so obvious that this was seen as a Christian cause. These were Christian people. They saw that what Hitler was doing was authentic Christianity, and the first time that had, you know, ever happened within written memory, I would guess, that we'd actually had a proper Christian regime that we know about. And that's the way that these people saw it. That's why they were prepared to die for it, because it was a pure and holy cause. And you think this, you know, this is Magda Goebbels, the first lady of the Third Reich. So, you know, we have to go by this, and we know that this is authentic. This wasn't written afterwards. So again, it's just more evidence to show that the mainstream narrative about them being pagans and devil worshippers and into the occult is nonsense once you look into it.
Yeah. Well, basically, like I said, I was out to try and find what the reason really was at the end of the greatest story ever told, when Franco came out with that statement saying that it was the son of the Catholic Church. And then from that point onwards, you know, we find out about the signing of the Concordat, and not just Hitler. You know, people don't say Mussolini went into the occult or Leon Degrelle went into the occult, but they all signed the same agreement with the Vatican, and slowly but surely the paint all came away. I mean, they went into Germany for 5 years after the war and shut everything down. Nobody could get in, nobody could get out. And to me, there's another clip in The Greatest Story Ever Told, when the daughter of the composer, I forgot his name now, but she actually says about they weren't allowed to speak the name Adolf Hitler, and the code name they used meant blessed Adolf. And so again, there's this religious Christian touch to what people are saying, which, you know, the Allies couldn't wipe everything out, and you see little signs, and this letter is just another one of them.
Well, it wasn't just National Socialism either, was it? I mean, you got Codriano. And that, his organisation was explicitly Christian, or Orthodox Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, you got Mussolini, who was openly Christian. I mean, fascism was Christian. They had, you know, they had Rome there. They had the Vatican there. They had the support for that.
Yeah.
I don't think you ever see Mussolini linked with paganism. You know, pagan ideas. It's really just National Socialism, where they're so keen to just wipe
the truth away from people.
Yeah, they're just so keen to wipe every positive memory of it away and take any chance they get to do that. I think they don't want us investigating our history, because they were really big on their on history and tradition. You know, the use of the runes that they made use of. So they try to make that out to be something sinister and something occult, when it wasn't. It was just investigation of history. Like you said about the Ahnenerbe, and about how that was, you know, folk heritage, not pagan heritage. It was looking into the history of the Aryan race. Well, we got we got some comments here, Dennis, as well, which we've got a bit of time for. And first one here is from World History Revisited. He said, give us a shout out, Dennis. I haven't heard from you in a bit. Hope all is good. Seems like everyone's getting purged these days. So give World History Revisited a shout.
I will do, yeah. I mean, he often leaves comments or ask me questions. I get back to him. I must have missed that. Because I've got a couple of channels, and sometimes I get stuck in one channel and forget about the other one.
Well, that's a new comment. That's that's a most recent comment, I think, on Wisest of the Wise channel. Any people been purged recently that we should know about?
Well, it's difficult for me to say because I mean I'm shadow banned anyway, so I can write a whole explanation or something what somebody asked me, but it won't go up on YouTube for people to see. So I'm sure if they're doing it to me, they'll be doing it to other people as well.
I think one way to get around that is, you know, if people set up their own websites and then they just need some kind of app that they can put into the website, a plugin with a video screen on it, and they can do live shows, you know, live video shows like that, and then upload it afterwards so that there's an archive. You know, I'm sure there must be apps, plugins like that are around. You know, we don't have to be limited to YouTube. Radio Aryan certainly isn't limited to YouTube. We've never used YouTube. You know, we set up our own website.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the biggest problem that we have to surmount is the payment processors, because at the moment, most people just have to use Bitcoin. That's the biggest hurdle to get around, I think.
That is a pain.
Yeah, well, you've even got MasterCard. The leftists have been lobbying MasterCard to build a clause in so that they can just stop dealing with anybody who the left denounce. And they're actually having a meeting on this and a vote. MasterCard.
So they're thinking of giving up a bit of usury as well, eh?
Yeah, well, this is just it. I guess it works out on. They'll have to work out whether how much money they actually make out of the so-called far right.
Yeah,
whether it's worth them telling the leftists where to go. Next comment. Yeah, well, I think we'll see what happens there over the next couple of weeks. I wouldn't like to say which way that's going to go. I hope that they say, well, look, we can't really impose on people's free speech. You know, you can't stop people from doing business transactions just because you don't like their opinions. That goes against fundamental human rights. But the way the world is now, such a clown world.
Have we got it?
You just don't know what they're going to say. Have we got William Wallace? He says, do you think the internet was a gift from people among the elite who were concerned for the future of humanity, or do you believe it was allowed to help the elites get their control over us? I think it was neither.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, it was set up. Yeah, it was set up so that they could communicate, so that countries could communicate to one another. If radio was down, television was down, these computers could all talk to one another, and it would be worldwide. So there would be able to be this communication. So it was originally a military thing, and then I think. Once they realised the potential for it, I think they thought, well, this is great. We're just going to be able to push even more pornography on people, and they're going to be even more dazed and even more unlikely to rise up or do anything. We'll just keep them all at home. This is great. And then I think it caught them unawares that it actually meant that it democratised the media. It meant that the public could make their own radio programs. The public could make their own television programs. We could make our own blogs. Yeah, all the things that we couldn't actually do before because we didn't have the money to do it. Suddenly we were able to. Suddenly it was democratized. So I think that caught them unawares. And obviously the way that they've dealt with that is to take the democracy away from the internet. And what I mean by that is, instead of the most popular sites appearing in the search results, you just get the sites that they want you to see now. You get the BBC and CNN on YouTube. They've done the same. Instead of seeing the most popular YouTubes, they'll be on the third or the fourth page, and it will all be CNN and BBC on there. So for all this nonsense about how wonderful democracy is, when they've actually got something that is genuinely democratic, like the internet was, they can't handle it, because genuine democracy will allow us to rise to the top, basically, because we've got the truth behind us. And the truth, whether they like it or not, the truth is popular. I mean, the truth hurts, but it is popular.
Well, it proved with the Brexit vote, didn't it? That was pure democracy in action, which backfired on them, and they're not happy about it, and now they're pushing for another referendum. Well, the true thing is, what happens if the vote is no again? Another referendum?
I think it, quite unintentionally, I guess, but I'm actually quite enjoying the EU elections and the campaigning. I think it's basically, I mean, it's given a chance for, well, it's given Nigel Farage a chance to really thrash the Conservatives. It's given Tommy Robinson a chance to stand for office, to be a European Union MP. And it's been a lot of fun watching that, because it's showing to the public all these double standards. I mean, Tommy Robinson's got milkshakes being thrown at him. He's being punched, and you've got MPs and newspaper editors cheering that on and saying, well, that's great, and I'd like to buy the person a drink. And then you've got these MPs in Parliament who are taking people to court for calling them Nazi, and have had people jailed for throwing eggs at them. And I think the public are seeing this and thinking, whoa, hang on a minute. What's going on here? Look at these double standards. So I think that, you know, that's been great. I mean, if they'd left the EU by now, that would have been wonderful. But the fact that they're actually having to have EU elections 3 years after we were told that we were going to leave, I think that's just as positive, really, because it just shows what liars they are. And this election has been so much fun. You got Sargon as well.
That's a great YouTube video. Not long back, and it has any number of politicians who were adamant that we were going to leave on this particular day. And it must have gone on for a couple of minutes. And it just made a mockery of it all. Really did.
Well, you predicted it, didn't you? You said, no, we're not going to leave. I don't believe it.
I did, actually, yeah.
You said that all along. I don't believe we're going to leave. So, yeah, you've been proved right.
I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. You've been proved right. Well, we'll just have to see what... what happens with this election. As I say, I mean, I'm enjoying the run-up to it anyway. We've got a comment from Sturm Vogel. He says, Dennis, I would like to hear you and Bill Fink chat sometime. His Mein Kampf site is incredible. And you did an interview with him the other day, didn't you?
Yeah, it was quite 2-3 times the number of downloads the first couple of hours that Bill normally gets. So we were both pleased at that one.
Yeah, it was a good interview. Yeah, it was a good interview, especially when you're going into, your dad and that, and when he was escaping the war zone. And yeah, very, very interesting. I always find that interesting when you talk about that. That's always good to hear that story there. We've got a comment here from, and people can find that on christoguinea.org. That's where you'll find Dennis's interview with Bill Fink, christoguinea.org. christoguena.org. And we've got a comment from Slaptrap, and they say, Jesus isn't white, the paintings are false, I guess centuries of artists and clergy, etc., are just retarded. So he seems to be a bit of a fool. But the point there is that, yes, in all the paintings and in all the icons of Jesus and the Christians and the apostles, they're always white. They're never Arabs. Mm. They're never Jews. They're always white. They've always been white. And that shows that's the way that they were seen by everyone. Nobody thought they were Jews. They all thought that they were white people.
Yeah, it's, I think Madonna made a video once trying to push the fact that she was trying to say that Jesus was black. But we all know the agenda behind Madonna. So that's even more proof.
Well, it's not a new idea. It's not a new idea today to think that Jesus was white. Jesus was Aryan, and the disciples were all Aryan. That's not a new idea. That's how it's always been. The new idea is to think that he was a Jew, or to think that he looked like an Arab, or to think that he had dark skin. That's the modern idea. And if you go back, I found a painting the other day from the 1500s, and it was of Cain and Abel. And Abel is blonde haired and blue eyed, and Cain is black skinned. And that shows you how they saw it back then as well. I mean, that's very enlightening, to use probably quite a better word, but illuminating.
Yeah. Lucifer's entered the room. Yeah,
that is very illuminating to tell us, you know, the way that they thought at the time. So, you know, the fact that he is white, he's always white, Jesus is always white looking, I mean, that really just, you know, that tells us that that's how people have always seen it. It's the modern day church that's totally different to how it was for the last, you know, 1900 years. It wasn't always like this. If it was always like this, it never would have taken off in the first place.
It wouldn't have lasted 2 minutes, exactly.
All right, Dennis, we've got one other one here, but I think we can leave that for next week. Do you think the video is going to be out next week? How long do you think it will be till part 20 is publicly available?
No, I've seen a lot of, I call it the jigsaw part. I haven't quite reached that yet, but I'm coming towards it, and then I've got to decide what goes where and what fits with what, if at all it fits. There's no guarantee. So, no, I'm a couple of weeks off yet, I would think.
So we'll just have to wait and see. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.